So I'm a computer scientist by trade, and oops, I've got the wrong thing on here. I was playing around, so let me get to the right one here. So I'm interested in geometric dissections, now that I've done that, I've lost it all. What happened? Oh, I can't believe this. I've been set up for half an hour. Okay, so here we are. I'm interested in geometric dissections, and let me show you what they are in just a minute here. So here's one of the simplest geometric dissections, also one of the oldest that is known. It's by Plato over 2,000 years ago. It's a dissection of two squares that are identical to a larger square. And you can do that in four pieces, and they are identical pieces. So this is the type of thing I'm interested in. And I'm interested actually in dissections that you can hinge together. So I took those four pieces and I hinged them using two hinges. And I can swing the pieces on one hinge, bringing it back up and getting, once again, a small square. Or I can bring it the other way, say bring this one down, and get half of the larger square. But I'm not interested in that type of hinging today. I'm interested in hinging where we're going to be doing piano hinging. You know what a grand piano is? And the grand piano has a lid that they flip up during a concert, and there is this long hinge that connects the lid to the sound box. And that is the same sort of thing as we have here, but I just wasn't very good at drawing grand pianos. But anyway, once you've got two pieces connected, you flip one, say, on top of the other, as we see down there. Okay, I can come back and I can do this dissection of two squares to one. I'm going to make them two levels high because when you flip one piece on top of another, you have something that's two levels high. And I'll do that. So let's see, here I've got two copies of a square that has a top level and a bottom level. And from those, I'll make a square that's larger and has two levels. Okay, and here actually is a movie of this. So it's two levels. You have to look quickly because I didn't show the two levels. But now you can see I'm going to unfold them, and you can see that I have hinged them together. I actually used four hinges on that one. It was just tape. And the same thing here. And there they go, and they fit together to form a larger square. Again, this two levels there. Okay, fair enough. But that's not what I'm going to talk about. But the problem is that on some of these dissections, you have two different assemblages that then combine to form a larger figure. And on models like this, people would say, OK, now why do I need two? And so why decide, rather than having two of one thing, getting one but bigger, I would have something that goes from something that's just one level high, but wider, is something that is two levels high, but smaller again. So I'd have, in the end, just one assemblage rather than two. And so I was interested to see what I could do with this, what kinds of interesting games there would be with this, geometric games or symmetry games, whatever. So in general, I want to dissect something that's p high, where p is some integer number, to something that's q high, some other integer number. And I'm going to try and do it in as few pieces as possible whenever possible. It's just one of the goals when you do dissections. And another dissection goal is that I'd like to have it be something nifty and lovely. And I guess it'll be mathematical because it's geometrical. So I'm going to return now to the two squares to one. But now I'm going to have one that's just one level high and the other that's two levels high. And let me say a little bit about the notation here, just so that you understand. Whenever I have a dotted line in the middle of a figure, that's where I'm doing folding. And where I have sort of a row of dots on some sort of solid edge, on the other level, there should also be a row of dots And so this is that there was actually a hinge there between piece A and piece C. You can actually see it over here when it was unfolded. And when I have a solid edge, that's just a cut. So let's see what we have, and I've got an animation for that. So it's one level thick, and then we folded it around, and it's two levels thick. Okay? So it's a very simple thing. Not anything to write home about. This is follow-up material to a book where I was doing piano hinge dissections, where everything would always be two levels thick. And I would have multiple assemblages sometimes. Okay, here's an example. This was the real example which propelled me to do this. So I had this dissection of 2 5-pointed stars, each of which was two levels high, to 1 10-pointed star, two levels high. And you can see I've cut things into pieces, and each of these pieces is a sort of, I don't know, what is that, a dagger or a dart or something. And all together there are 20 of them spread over two levels here, and well, 10 in this pair of stars on the top and 10 on the bottom. And so here's an actual model that I demonstrated for a while. It's two levels thick, and this is one of the 2 5-pointed stars. And you can see, here you can see what the folding is. And so sometimes the folding is really rather neat, though it looks a little bit disorganized there. There's actually a method to that madness. And then I've got another one that's identical to it. And you know, if I was showing it to people, I'd hand one to one person, one to the other, and say, okay, who can get the 5-pointed star the quickest? And they always like that competition. And so here, it folds up into this stack, which was sort of an intermediate form that, you know, just sort of happened. It wasn't a goal. Okay, now let me get the 10-point star. And you notice I don't get a whole 10-point star. I just get half of it from one and then half from the other. You notice it's sort of a funny half because I've got something on the I have things I have to overlap in when I slide them together. And I get that. So I was so really pleased with it, but people would always ask, well, why do you need two of them to make the 10-pointed star? Okay. So anyway, so here's the outline for the talk. We've just done the introduction. I'm going to race through some stuff on squares, irregular hexagons, and 6-pointed star. The new stuff really are about equilateral triangles and what I call well-formed polyominoes. And those are actually motivated by the title of this workshop. Because I thought, what am I going to talk about this workshop? I'll do this stuff. I thought, well, what's algorithmic about the things that I've shown you so far? And well, perhaps there's something algorithmic or not, but this stuff will really be algorithmic. So hopefully I'm going to be able to. So here's an example of 8 squares to 1. So it's going to be something that's 8, in the end, 8 high to something that's just 1 high. And you notice that I can break up this thing that's 1 high into 1, 2, 3, 4 squares, and then 8 isosceles right triangles. Altogether, that's 8 squares. And I don't expect you to notice anything more than I've got 8 levels here. Don't try and decipher it. But let's just watch. And sometimes there are things that are really nice. Like the colors alternate on levels in that 8 stack of 8. So there are all sorts of games you can play as you try and design this nicely. Regular hexagons you can do lots of things with. Now the hexagon, you can break up each regular hexagon into 6 equilateral triangles. And you can have a dissection of 3 such things into something that has a larger side length. You're actually realizing the square root of 3 along this length here. And here's actually the diagram for it, but let's just go and jump and look at the animation of it. So it's one level high. We have things fold to the bottom and things fold to the top. And a lot, you might ask, well, how do you design these things? And it's, once you know the geometry, you just are trying to engineer it around so that The folding is very precise, that you really imagine that there are these piano hinges there. So it's not like folding paper where you can sort of cheat. So who does origami here? I'm not speaking to you guys, put your hands down. Because you get to have multiple things fold over, which is a nice, actually it's a different model, but I'm using a model where the paper has thickness, if you will, and you can't get away with that. So anyway, here's a dissection of three things to four. Now this was a dissection of a Los Angeles architect. He died in 1957. He left this manuscript behind. It was almost lost. And I adapted his thing. So I've got something that's based on it, but not exactly the same. And here it is. This one's made out of cherry wood. We're looking at this, and it is four levels thick. And now I've got to fold it into something that's three levels thick. And there's some tricks there. Tomorrow I have something at the tail end of lunch where you can come and you can actually handle some of these models. And this will be one of the ones that's available for handling. But people who are hand-handed are only allowed to watch because they're a little bit delicate. These aren't quite industrial strength. They aren't bad, but they're, you know, you can break them if you force them. Hexagrams. Okay, so you can break up a hexagram into six of these rhombuses that have 60 degree and 120 degree angles. And you can get something that's square root of three larger on the side just by chopping up 18 of those appropriately. So you have to split some of those rhombuses in half. And here is the plan for it. Again, don't try and figure it out. And that's the animation. One level thick. Three levels. Now, this was really tricky because I didn't fold it all once. I had to stop and do some intermediate thing because otherwise pieces would bump into each other. So I'm going to show that one to you again. And this time you might imagine why I was careful to stop and do something else and then proceed forward. And the first time you do these animations, sometimes you haven't thought it all through. And you get to the point where pieces are going through each other. And you say, uh-oh, that's not going to sell. So anyway, here's on to the part that's really new for this meeting here. So I'm interested in taking a one-high triangle into something that's n-high. So I'm really trying to get triangles that are the square root of 7 on an edge then. And I'm going to do it, not square root of 7, square root of n. And I'm going to do it first for something that are really nice square roots, like 4, 9, 36. Because there's still some challenge there. That you can't just, you have to cut up these triangles, you can't just sort of fold them, because you fold one onto the top and one onto the bottom, and then you've run out of folds, unless you're an origami person and cheat. But here's how you can do it with not too many more cuts. And then you're left with four sides. Okay? Well, okay, let's do 9. A little bit prettier, I guess. Now this one I hesitated just because it was an experiment and I like the experiment. So I pulled it halfway. I'm going to do that one again. Okay, so watch it. It gives a pause and you can follow through. And again, these are all mathematically precise. Now there's this one here that's 36 to the 1. And I don't have an animation for that. I ran out of time. But what's interesting was seeing if I could come up with a regular pattern for them. And I've got a regular pattern now that if the height you want is the square of a number that's a multiple of 3, I can do it. And there's a regular pattern for how you generate those. So that's the algorithmic aspect of it. And I ran out of steam. I really should have had this picture and I should have had another one. But you would have gotten flummoxed a little bit from it anyway. Now what I was really aiming at was trying to get things that are too high to something else where this n now is not a perfect square. So for example, for n being twice this funny thing, where this funny thing evaluates, if p is equal to 1, evaluates to 3, if p is equal to 2, evaluates to 7, if it's equal to 3, it evaluates to 13. And let me show you some of that, and then you can carry on in a way that I'll mention very briefly. So here's one where it's we take something that's 2 high, something that's 6 high, and this is actually pretty easy because you just slice each one of these in half, and then be very clever. Some of the pieces have to be go through 2 levels. I did make an animation of that because I wanted to leap immediately to this one where it's a 7-to-1 thing. And let me show you. I've got an actual model made. I got so excited I rode away to my laser cutting friend, and he cut this for me. It's 2 levels thick. I'm going to go to something that's 14 levels thick. Okay, so back we come. And it feels pretty easy to do this if you're watching, but if you're playing with it, I had to practice once or twice to make sure it didn't flub in front of the video camera. And there we have something that is 14 levels thick. Now, the question comes, well, what about the next number in that sequence where it's p squared plus p plus 1 was substituting, I guess, 3 for it, and you end up with this, which is a square root of 13 on the side. And what's interesting is you look, and in the middle of these, you have, instead of one triangle, you've got 4 of them here. And so what happens is I can handle the edges, but then I have to be able to, sorry, I can handle the edges, but then I have to be able to handle the centers, and the centers aren't nicely aligned. So I have to have a separate folding for this and a separate folding for that. So now what I'll use is I'll use what I had before. I showed you how to do a 1 high into a 4 high. But I'm just going, and so I'm going to have 4 things be at the bottom and 4 things be at the top. And I didn't do an animation of that. But then I thought about, well, what about combining 3 and 4 like I did before, so hexagons. And so here I've got an animation for that, where I don't have a general technique. So that's, how many levels was that initially? That's 3 levels thick, so I must have had 4 levels thick. You followed this all, right? No, you didn't. Yeah, I'm really good. So that's 4 levels thick, but there's some pieces that were double thickness. Around comes. So there are all sorts of games. The next thing was playing around with polyominoes. Now I want to be very careful about this. This is spelled polyomino, not something you've seen earlier today and we'll see later on. Okay? So I don't know, must have been a mistake on the part of the conference organizers that they invited me to this. So I actually hadn't done anything really much on polyomino. Here's an example of a polyomino, and this is actually called a Latin cross. Now any polyomino is made up of squares where you glue things together along the edges. So this is made up of 6 squares glued together. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take it from something that's 2 high to 1 high. And so you can see here, this really should have twice the area of this because I have 2 levels. And indeed, if you add up, well, here's a quarter of a square and a quarter, and this, okay, you can count off, and it will work out. There's 3/4 of one, there's a half of one, and there's some full ones here somewhere. They're just the right number of them. And so here, it's all done up. Again, let's just watch the animation. 1 level thick, now it's going to go to 2 levels thick. You want to see that one again?
Yes.
Okay. Now what's actually very interesting is I'm wrapping things around. Now you had to be really very careful. That initial wrap, I had 4 things moving at the same time. And I had to, because otherwise, if I'd done them one after another, I'd have one thing blocking at the end. I wouldn't be able to get something out and get something around. okay, now after some thought, you know, I said, oh, I can do this type of cross and I can do that thing. And finally I realized I could do polyominoes, things that I call, well, first I thought I could do just tree polyominoes. Here's a tree polyomino. I know this looks vaguely like something that we saw in a previous talk. I don't know which one it was. Someone had a tree-shaped thing. It's not exactly. Okay, anyway, there's squares glued together. And now I have to be very careful about something. It's well-formed in the sense that whenever you can come in on one direction and go out from the square on another direction, you're changing direction. And I've labeled each and every square where that's the case. So if I'm coming over here and I want to continue, I have to change direction. I come up to here and I can change direction. So I have five change direction squares. And it's well formed if no two change direction squares are directly adjacent. Okay? And it turns out that for these well formed polyominoes, I need just nine different shapes and I can create any number of these. There's other nice properties, like the colors alternate if you use color transition levels. So here are the nine shapes. And what to actually generate this one, I can give you the algorithm. I take the original figure and rotate it 45 degrees. I chop off isosceles right triangles off of each corner. I have identified the change direction squares and I put appropriate pieces in place of them. I chop up what remains in the vertical sections. And in the final step, I do the same thing for horizontal, but at this point I already have all the horizontals in because it wasn't very complicated. Well, it was complicated, but not super complicated. So here is what I get on one. For the one high figure, and there's what I get if I have something that's too high. And then here is an actual demonstration of this. And it's just a little floppy. And you'll see that as I turn things over, things are going to flop a little bit because the tape is sort of springy. Okay, and I can't get it to go lie any flatter than that side. And now I'm going to come around, I'm going to start folding. And this is a very humbling experience, because I knew exactly what I wanted, and you have to be careful or you'll stress out the tape and pull it away. So this is not quite industrial strength. You notice a very nice alternation going from light to dark, going from one piece to a neighboring piece. And do that final thing there. Okay. And so there I've got it sort of turned around, and it won't lie flat. But let me turn it over now, because I end up folding all the pieces the same way. If I turn it on that side, the springiness is counteracted by the cushion. So that's what it looks like. Okay. I could also do this Jerusalem cross. I'm going to skip that because I think we're a little bit shorter time. I'll do one more. You can do things with holes in them, of all things. So here's something, and I don't know whether that's an infinity sign or an eight-turned on its side or how you want to view it, but there it is. And here is a video of that. And you can see it's got two levels. And we're going to fold into something that's one level high, but expanding out on each side, correspondingly. And you notice there's no tricks here, there's nothing up my sleeve. There were no sleeves, actually, when I did that. Or there are short sleeves. Okay, I'll flip it over in a minute so I don't have to hold those. Okay. And I did other things, I'll skip those too, because I think we're almost out of time and I want to get to the star, because I showed you the star where we had two stars to one, and I want to have it be now that I have the 10-pointed star being two levels high and the 5-pointed star being four levels high. But here's what it looks like. It's actually the same set of pieces as before, except I glue some of them together. I only have 15 pieces this time. This one's 2 levels thick, as you can see. And now I'm going to pull it apart, and you can see it's sort of a crazy, it looks like a crazy hinging, but it actually has a method to the madness. If you went back and examined the diagram I described it first. And it all folds up and something like that, but that's not exactly what I wanted. I want to get something that is 4 levels thick. So here I go, I'm going to fold and fold again. And there it is. And just a moment, we'll check to see if there really is 4 levels thick. There's a check. Okay. Okay, so here's the conclusion. So I was looking at folding some figure that was P high to another was Q high. And it's a variation on piano hinge dissections, which are always just 2 levels thick. It's at least as challenging as them, I think. These make nice manipulation puzzles. And I think if you come tomorrow, I think it's right before the 2 o'clock session, you have a chance to feel with it. It won't be too hard, but it'll be the right level. And it's math and puzzle and art that's within reach. It's a lot of fun. And so let me just say questions?
Yes.
Are there solutions you find unique?
They don't need to be unique. Certainly, what I showed you, once I have the model, there's only one way in general to go from one thing to the other. Though there might be different sequences, the pieces will end up in exactly the same position once you've done the folding. But that doesn't mean you can't have come up with a slight variation of pieces in some cases and have a slightly different dissection. There's no way I can claim that there's just one dissection that folds from one to another. Yes?
I'm interested in your graphics. Not the photographs, but the drawing.
Yes.
How did you generate those?
Oh, I'm using very old-fashioned software there. This is coming from Unix-based stuff. It's the processor PIC, P-I-C. And so what I do is I put it on that. It's a low-level graphics language that then I process, and I get encapsulated PostScript out of that.
So are you drawing something and putting it into that, or are you generating it?
I'm generating it by, the language says, put a point here, put a point there, put a line between those 2 points.
Okay, so you're not.
It's very low level. Okay. But it's very precise. There's no sticky points and things like that.
But it doesn't have the pictures, you have these
It takes work. Yes?
How much of all that animation software are you writing? You're keeping track of all those edges as they move?
So the animation that I did was courtesy of Open Geometry, Georg's creation. And so you can create still pictures with that. There is also an option for doing animation. There's also an option for downloading. Because I didn't want to run this within Open Geometry and have to jump back and forth and open and close things. So I downloaded it as a sequence of JPEGs, and then there was special software that the system staff actually already had sitting around at Purdue University, which glued them all together into MPEGs. So in the end, you saw MPEGs. Other questions? Yes?
There are P squared plus P plus 1. It's just the order of the projected plane of order n, of order p.
I hadn't thought about it, but this is an old formula. I mean, so when you're dealing with hexagonal figures or equilateral triangular figures, you've got 30 degree and 60 degree, 120 degree angles, and if you draw sort of a diagonal in that hexagonal plane, that's really what you're capturing. Actually, you would need to have it be p squared plus pq plus q squared in general. But we can talk about that later. Yes,
Bob? Isn't it true that there are some polynomials associated with polyominoes?
Well, it, certainly if you interpose the letters enough, I guess that's true, right? But I don't know exactly what you're referring to, which polynomials.
I may have seen something like in Wikipedia or something about polynomials associated to polynomials.
I have to, you know, some of this stuff is sort of second nature, and so I may just be forgetting something that you would say aha,
For instance, when you look at the triangle, you can imagine triangles, just forget about the base of the triangle, triangles can be considered as a piecewise polynomial, okay? So this is the one and the other one, this is piecewise polynomial. And again, when you are doing some you are making more triangle inside a triangle, again, you are giving it polynomial. This is, what kind of
I don't know whether that carries over for when you're building figures with squares. It does? Oh, okay. Well,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Squares, but it's just fine.
That's what you had in mind,
No, I was actually asking, I wonder if this was asked, but it looks like a theoretically interesting problem to when you're folding things. I mean, if you give it to me to fold some one of those things where I have more figures. Is there such a thing as a minimal number of folds you need to do?
You can ask all sorts of questions like that. Now, it's possible that I could design something that you couldn't fold from one configuration to another without self-interpenetration or something. So I haven't looked into the robotics aspects of it that much, but just more getting something that works, at least in some examples. Yes?
Rubik's second puzzle was engaging with fishing line. That may be a more durable product than just scotch tape.
This is the one that you had the panels, that say six panels and the fishing line going around.
Yeah.
Well, but that's a very regular structure there.
Right.
Now, what I was using was a high quality, it's not scotch tape that I'm using. I'm using a specialty tape from 3M.
Right.
But really, I need something more. After I shot the videos, I had to do a little bit of repair already on those models. In theory, you shouldn't have to do the repair, but even knowing exactly which folds to make, it was a little dicey. Yeah.
Do you have
maybe
any
mathematical
explanation? How the space one should be from one shape to another shape? Is minimal or maximum?
The number of folds?
Yeah, exactly. Because the system I was teaching mathematics, puzzle and games, it was very interesting for to get from one shape to another shape, minimal actions.
Yeah.
Maybe two, three, four, five.
Rotation
as well.
To be honest, I haven't looked at that aspect of it. I've just been trying to get something that worked. But once you build things, once you build a bigger and bigger base, and you can, of course, explore out in lots of different directions.
It would be maybe a difficult question. It has to become the story of puzzles.
And to be honest, I've shied away from trying to do the general proofs of, for example, with the well-formed polyominoes, I don't know whether for sure in general one can always do it. Now, one has some choices to make, especially when they're holes. Exactly how you get to how certain cuts, and you can put them anywhere you want, and you have to put them in such a way that you're not going to end up with self-obstruction. But I haven't explored that aspect of things. Because I knew that for the audiences I was going to show this to, that would not be foremost in their minds. I was wrong, I guess.
thank you. Were you questions, of course, or contributions as well, to the workshop. Thank our speaker.